Lord, just come to you this morning. We need you every hour. We need your direction and wisdom and counsel. Thank you for your word, which gives us clear teaching and truth. And just pray that this morning, as we look at these questions and look at some conclusions, that this will just be an edifying morning for each of us here. I pray this in your name. Amen. So what I'd like to do today is address a couple of questions that have been thrown out there to me, and then we will get back into our lesson plan. So far I've had a couple of questions. One was, will my Down syndrome brother in his new body, will it reflect his earthly affliction of Down syndrome? Is that the way, right way to put that, Dave?
Yeah.
Okay. Dave's family has, I think it's getting shut. So Dave's family has a brother. Our family also have a brother and sister. So it's a good question. So what do you guys think? Will that new body, will it look like the Down syndrome body here on Earth? Crickets.
I have a sister that
has a tough question.
Bad cerebral palsy, and I guess I've always just thought, you know, the reason she is afflicted that way is because of sin. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that her glorified body would not bear that.
Yeah, no more curse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the right way to look at it. I asked my son-in-law, Josh Mills, this question. He said, I'm looking forward to finding that out along with you. So, this is answer. That wasn't much help.
It's a great answer.
I think it challenges us to consider what is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
What is perfect?
Yeah.
I mean, we have our own idea about what that is, but what God thinks is perfect is another story.
For me, with one eye, when I get to heaven, my two eyes will be open. I don't have a brace. I'll probably have a perfect body. So.
Yeah, he's transforming our lowly body into a glorified body. So I think there's no comparison.
But I think we expect that for ourselves too. I mean, not just, you know, there's something imperfect about our own bodies.
Everybody.
Yeah. That we're wanting to be transformed.
For sure.
Look what Jesus was able to heal while he was here too. You know, speech and sight and those kinds of things.
I think that's the pattern that we should expect, is he pretty much cured everything. I mean, he went teaching, preaching, and healing. And that's what the kingdom of heaven will look like, is there won't be any blindness or any of those afflictions at all, for sure.
So here's the other thing. I agree that, I mean, his disabilities won't be there, but there is a look to Downs that there is not for, I mean, you can see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Mom's argument was, well, that's the way he is. Mm-hmm. He may not have all these other handicaps, but he'll probably look that way. That's why I don't know. Is that part of the curse? You looking the way you are? I mean,
yes.
I mean,
so
like
it is
right.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah. That's what so. The question, you know, that people ask: or will we be able to recognize each other in heaven? You know, so if they're completely changed.
Right. So that would, if he's completely looks different, then you wouldn't recognize him. He said that was Mom's argument. I didn't thought of that before. I just assumed that he wouldn't, I guess, look like Downs. But then I didn't know what to think about that. So anyway, I'm not arguing that he would have a disability, but his appearance may, I don't know. So
you're gonna recognize each other one way or another,
right? Mm-hmm. How does that work?
I don't know.
So
but Jesus, when he in his glorified body, so the apostles did not. Or, you know, on the road to Emmaus, the people did not recognize him, that something happened in order for to recognize who he was? And was that with speech or was that something spiritual that was happening?
Well, it's very clear that on the road to Emmaus, that those two, it says that their eyes weren't, they were stopped, so they didn't recognize him. So that was a divine intervention somehow. When he started praying for the meal that night, then they, this is the Lord, so then at that point they understood that.
Well, and Mary at the tomb didn't recognize him. She thought he was a gardener, so.
Yeah, she heard his voice and realized it. Yeah. So I don't know if I put a lot into either one of those, like they had a little trouble recognizing, but was that divine in nature or not? I'm not sure.
And for two, when they saw Jesus' nail on his pulse and the scar on the side, Jesus told one of the disciples to touch my side.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I think those marks will still be there in heaven, but that's Jesus, and that's the center of our salvation. So I think that's part of the remembrance that he will always have.
I don't know if this is a rabbit hole, but how old will I be?
I anticipated more questions.
Will I be, like old lady, or will I?
We're gonna look like the day we die, right? You guys heard this book?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna
read
it. Randy Alcorn goes. I think he goes out there a ways.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But maybe he would come close to answering your question. I don't think we know the answer to that.
Okay. Well, little babies can't be babies forever, can they? I mean, that's not very, you can't do the ministry if you're a baby, can you? I'm sorry, I've been doing this very hard.
You know, Randy Alcorn would say that the life that you could have lived had it not been for death entering
okay.
in, that's the life that
oh,
you
okay.
will,
oh, well, that makes good sense.
That you will be able to experience in your glorified body.
That's
I don't know, that's just what his speculation is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think our term is glorified body, but we don't have a grasp of glory, like here, earth side.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned the disciples, and they have seen Christ in a glorified body, and they have also, there have been, Jesus' transfiguration and those sorts of things. But we don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
But we also do know that in heaven there is work for us to be done, and there's worship for us to do. Therefore, my presumption is, based on the fact that we'll have work to do, our bodies will allow us to do that work. So anything that inhibits us from doing that work will be removed because that is part of the curse. And our jobs will be significantly easier and much more joyful because we won't have to fight against our bodies to get our work done. To God's glory, not to our own.
Sound good, Carol?
Well, I'm feeling younger already.
But to answer the question about what's he going to look like, I don't think we'll know because it's a glorified body. It's not an earthly body. Maybe he'll have physical traits that are similar, or maybe it's a spiritual thing altogether, and your spirit is what we recognize, your soul, your
personality
is what
yeah.
we recognize, not our bodies, because there are so many iterations of our bodies. I don't know what Carol looked like when she was in her 20s. So I'm sorry, Carol. I don't know if I'll recognize you in your 20s.
I love it. It's good. Well, we know this from Scripture. Romans 8:23. We eagerly await the redemption of our body. 2 Corinthians 5:2. For in this body we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling. 1 John 3:2. It doesn't appear yet what we will be. We know that when he appears, we shall be like him. So we'll have a body like him. 1 Corinthians 15, what you sow is not the body that is to be. So that's an interesting one. And he talks about, you put in a kernel of wheat, but what comes up is a plant. You know, so you have that to consider. The resurrected body will be a different variety of the flesh than we know from our earthly experience. that you will still eat. Apparently, if it's like Jesus' glorified body, you'll be able to move about wherever you want really quickly. New Jerusalem's 1,500 miles every which way, and apparently you'll be able to get wherever you want to. You can go through walls, right? He did. So I'm borrowing some of that from Randy Alcorn, but I think that's going to be good. Philippians 3:21, God will transform our lowly body to be like his glorious body. So there's a comparison between this body being lowly and the glorified one. And that word transform is not used very much in the New Testament. Metaschematizo. And it's a change of schematic. It's the word we get schematic from. So there's going to be a change. But I'm not able to directly answer your question. I'll go back to Josh's answer. I'm looking forward to finding that out along with the rest of you. So I could read some more out of both Randy Alcorn's book, Heaven, and John MacArthur has one, The Glories of Heaven, which is also excellent. So all those questions that we could just go on and on about, we don't really know for sure. They try to at least touch on them in here. Okay, the other question that came up was cremation. And I kind of anticipated that one might come along. Should Christians cremate their loved ones? And I want to say up front that I don't want to induce any guilt here for anybody that may have taken that path with family members or buying consciences biblically unnecessarily. First off, there is no clear command in either the Old Testament or the New Testament that says thou shalt not cremate the human body. Okay? So there just isn't any text I could turn to that says don't do this or do this. Or that's, you have the freedom to do that or you don't. So just making that really clear up front. Looked at several resources on this, and interestingly enough, I think the day of I got that question, Don Green, who is in Cincinnati, from the kind of the Master Seminary Circle, posted on Facebook an observation that he was making that the funeral home director that he knows said that he is now doing 70% cremations, 30% burials. So just the huge uptick in that. And he was making some observations about that and saying the shift to cremation is irreversibly taking away the capacity of future generations to have that tangible connection point with people whose past affects their present. Now, not everybody who's cremated has their ashes spread, but a lot of them do. So there's no point to go, here's this person is buried here, died on this date, or was born on this date, died on this date. Not everyone values that. Indeed, people like me are probably in the minority, but those names etched in stone tell us that the person was here. Stone tells us that the person mattered enough to someone to preserve their memory for themselves and others. I can go take you to a cemetery where some of the generations ahead of us are buried. I have a great-great-grandfather all the way down. So there's this trail that's being lost with cremation. Again, not trying to say that you should. I'm just saying this is an observation he made that I thought was a good one. And he had massive kinds of responses to this post. So I think it kind of sparked some things about cremation that people are thinking about. So again, I could go into, I also went to gotquestions.org, which is always a good, succinct place to go to. And they give some scriptures from the Old Testament, some from the New Testament, but again, there really isn't any definitive statement on it. But the one that I thought was really good, and this is where I would personally lean, so I'm giving you, this is personal preference and my own convictions on it, would be John Piper had a lot to say about it. And he gave some statistics I thought were interesting. There's been a skyrocketing preference for cremation over the past decades in the United States. In 1960, 3.5% of people were cremated. In 1999, it was about 25%. And in 2014, it was just under 50%. And in some states, it's over 75%. He says the causes are the secularization of the culture and economics. He said fewer people test the practice with biblical criteria and more people want the cheapest solution. So I thought that was a good observation on his part. He also, if I can find it here, talked about secular cultures. Almost everyone adhering to Hinduism, Sikhism, or Buddhism cremate their dead. Japan has one of the highest cremation rates in the world, with the country reporting a cremation rate of 99.85%. So that's pretty much everybody. They even have ordinances requiring it due to a lack of cemetery space or for sanitary reasons. The first cremation in America took place in 1876. It was accompanied by readings from Charles Darwin and Hindu scriptures. And he cites reference on that. John Piper's pretty direct. He said it's for many years, relatively few persons, mostly liberals and freethinkers, chose cremation. Now, I know there's a lot of Christian people who've chosen that. So again, not trying to induce any guilt or anything like that. But he gives two primary reasons why he thinks that a body should be buried as opposed to cremation. I want to focus on those. Two focuses of scripture lead away from burning towards burying. One is the focus of the meaning and importance of the human body. So he's looking at the dignity of the human body as number one, now and in the life to come. And the other is the meaning of fire as it relates to the human body now and in the life to come as well. And he says the greatest thing that can be said about the human body is that the eternal Son of God was incarnate in a human body. Today in heaven, Jesus has a body he had on earth, glorified. And when he comes, he will transform our body to be like his glorious body. So he said this was an immeasurable elevation in history of the dignity and glory of the human body when Jesus was incarnated. He goes ahead and says that our body is God's dwelling, our body is God's purchase, our body is God's possession, and our body is God's glory. So he really is, and this is John Piper through and through, and I love that about him. He's lifting the value and dignity of human life and of the body. He's completely pro-life, and I love that about him. So he says the body will never be discarded. It's been bought by the blood of Jesus. And he talks about the other part of it, the dreadfulness of fire, the second part, that leads him away from cremation. He talks about the use of burning the body with Achan, who was the one who took some treasure out of Jericho, and his body was burnt along with those of his family. And he looked at that as like, that was an evil, it was a destructive thing to do. And I think there was also examples where, didn't they find the bones of kings and burn those as well? Some of the kings of Judah, maybe even the kings of Israel. I think it was John Wycliffe, I believe. Some of you church history people would know this. I think they dug his bones up and burnt those as well at some point during the Reformation. So he looks at that as a negative thing, to burn the body from its dignity and just from its destructive, least use in Scripture. And he also connects the fires of hell or the lake of fire, where there, those people in hell or in the lake of fire will have a body, and fire will be part of the use of the torment there. So he says, in summary, the two biblical focuses that point away from burning or cremation to burying are the preciousness of the human body as God's purchase and possession now and forever, and the dreadfulness of fire as it relates to the human body, especially after death. So I share that because that I think has some good biblical thought there that I appreciated. And again, that would be where I would be at for those who, you know, are interested or wondering about cremation. Again, I need to say this over and over again. I'm not trying to make it into a biblical command. There's no legalism here, no law. That's just it's interesting that as our country has become less biblical and has gotten away from Jewish and Christian values, it seems like cremation is a bigger thing. You look at what do they do in scriptural times? Obviously, it was burial. You look at John the Baptist was beheaded, and it says that some of the disciples, his disciples, came and took his body away and buried it. Then you have Joseph of Arimathea, who came and asked Pilate, "Can I have the body of Jesus?" and gave it a really fit burial, his own tomb. Actually, poor people back then were buried; rich people could have their own tomb. After they decompose, they would take those bones out and at some later date, not always, but a later date, and dispose of those in a burial somewhere. So there was care given to the body of John the Baptist, care given to the body of Jesus. That's the scriptural evidence that we have. So any comments, any thoughts on that? Not trying to get arguments started here or anything like that, but that's my answer to that question. Anybody got any feedback or Jen's?
Curiosity, do you know if Jewish culture allows for cremation?
I don't know the answer to that. It's a good question. Could look that up. Somebody
Catholics
want to Google
allow it.
What's that?
Catholics allow it, but
okay.
It still has to be buried or stored
okay.
in a sacred place. Sacred. So.
Sacred, yeah. And you, if you're not cremated, you think, well, you need to have the body. If you're on that side, where well, you got to have a body for the resurrection. Somebody that's been dead for 100 years, they're dust. They're the same as the ashes.
Or buried at the bottom of the ocean. Or
yeah. And there's
9/11, how many were just gone?
Yeah. And I got to think, I wonder why there isn't something clear on that inscription. I think this is the very reason. Okay, you have people like in 9/11 who just were incinerated. That would be wrong to say, well, that's, you know,
exactly.
That's wrong. So that's why I think there's not necessarily clear.
They left of Moses and Elijah, and yet they were on the Mount of Transfiguration. So their body, even though it was dust by then, was there. So, then, I mean, I get it, what you're saying about, I don't know, burning is a problem, but it's all decomposing. I mean,
it doesn't
make me feel better to think my loved ones in a coffin decomposing any more than he's in a urn.
My personal. Hope that's on tape.
I'll try not to put Alan in one of them.
I'll tell Pamela to come and edit.
Yeah. Regardless.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
And how many sailors and how many people are, you know, wherever in the ocean got swallowed up by a shark or whatever.
And we know in Genesis 3 that we'll return to dust.
Yeah.
We're going to return to dust.
Yeah.
Totally get all that. Here's where I'm at. I have a problem burning the body of a loved one. Me personally. That's just it for me. So, but other people don't.
I think if you're of the mindset that, like, the secular mindset, like, you're just particles, it doesn't matter, you know, you're not there anymore, so just dispose of it, or bury it under a tree, or, you know, whatever I mean, like, you're just stardust. That's a lot different, but I think the commemoration is, too, what's important, too, right?
I agree with that, yeah. So, I think somebody who's been cremated, if there is a place of remembrance, I think that's valuable. I had a neighbor who was cremated 5 or 6 years ago whenever he died, and he was telling me I was going to have his ashes spread on a ranch in the Oklahoma Panhandle that was dear to him. So there's no remembrance of him by anything. I think that's, we all want our loved ones to be remembered, right? So I think for those who are cremated, putting them in a place where there's a place of remembrance is a good thing.
I'm thinking of the resurrected body then. I mean, God has the power to accumulate, however that's going to happen, you know, to give them a body.
Yeah.
Even though they've been ashes.
All going going to be ashes or dust, right? Pretty much, unless you died recently when he comes and when the resurrection happens. But it's an interesting question, and it's provoked. I got hands going up all over here.
I think, just trying to find, I'm trying to find the right words to phrase this and keep it kind of pithy. Like reading the news, every once in a while they'll be bringing a service member back from a foreign theater, you know, 60, 70, 80 years later. Like every once in a while you'll see like a little piece on like, oh, this soldier, this Marine's ashes, or remains were found in France from World War One.
Just happened this week.
Yeah. Or even Vietnam.
107 years ago, yep.
Yeah, and there's this palpable of like, you want, like their loved ones, I mean, at this point, completely separate, probably never even met them, may have seen a picture of them. Like there's this desire to bring them back close to the people who descended from them, or who, like, back to home, quote unquote. So I think there's like a real palpable desire in people's hearts, like, I want to be able to visit, even though they are not here, visit their remains and have those, and know where those are, and have an account for them.
Yeah.
So, but
it's a way to honor them and the connectedness. Have I come across too much on one side? Hurt my personal preference? Because there's freedom here. There really is, as far as I know. I think Courtney.
Well, it seems funny. It's coming across a little bit. Not, and you're very clear and how you're sharing it. But I'm almost feeling like maybe we need more Christian morticians that care for the bodies of those who pass away. But I know that's not really what you're saying. But how do you think affordability affects this? Because I do know, like, we had to take care of my brother's body in the spring, and it was, I think, around over 10,000, I think, for that. And then it was like 20 something hundred. It was less than three.
Yeah, it looks like.
So I feel like the convenience, I guess that's like, it feels crass to put it in numbers. It's a factor for people. Do you feel like there's more for, I don't know what the, I don't know, like, people are maybe stuck with numbers, and I think if, like Marie and I were talking, if God puts it on your heart, he'll provide. But
yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. It's
so right now, I don't know what it is in Kansas, but we had to do that in California. So to handle a body, to deal with that, and then to put it in the ground by the plot, it's just an interesting factor to all of that.
Cremation's about $2,500, and a traditional burial is probably from 10,000 up.
If Christians, if someone was so stirred to do like a mortician is, could you make it more affordable for people to have, that wanted to do burials, it would have, it could, yeah.
In fairness to John Piper, I thought this was really good. He says, my proposal in this article is that Christian churches be willing to help families financially with simple Christ-exalting funerals and burials so that no Christian is drawn to creation because it's cheaper. You're doing it because it's cheaper, then he's offering this. He said, I'm not thinking mainly of a line item in the budget, but of a segregated compassion fund that church members may give to regularly or as need arises. So I thought that was really a good solution that he brought out there, that's kind of going to what you're talking about.
I can't speak for everyone, but generally, just how you summed it up, your preference is it's not your preference to burn the body of a loved one, and it wasn't our first year, but it just is what we ended up having to kind of, became okay with, or whatever. And we memorialized his ashes in a special place and have a plan for a stone.
That's great.
But I feel like cost is a major for a lot of people.
And transporting a body across the country or whatever is also extremely expensive.
It's a significant factor for families if you, especially if someone dies suddenly or you plan for it.
I agree, and that's definitely what was brought out in everything, I saw that a lot of decisions are economic. They're made up for economic factors because of the inflated cost of funerals, and I'm sure that their costs have gone up. I'm not saying that they're not.
Well, I can't help but like draw the connection between, like you said that only 3% happened in 1965, is that right?
Yeah.
And then
1960, 3.5%.
And I'm a little bit like freaked out by the fact that like Hitler's influence and the, you know, the massive burnings of bodies, like that is sickening and horrifying. Mm-hmm. And the way that they made that so convenient in this twisted way that the bodies were dealt with, and I was like,
get rid of the evidence.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing.
And I wonder if that became just on people's thoughts as,
No, I think the two factors that are cited usually are secularization,
yeah,
the moving away from a biblical worldview, and economics.
Yeah.
It's definitely out there.
Thanks for making it open to either option. Yeah, that's
very
clarifying that too.
Jason?
Not to chime in too much, but my father was a mortician since before I was born,
mm-hmm,
and this might be old information just growing up with him, but just I know all those guys were family men. All of them had, a couple of them had kids my age, and a couple of them were new fathers and things like that. And there was always options to make it more affordable for families. I think there wasn't ever really a desire to nickel and dime people that were suffering. So I don't know if that's true of everyone. That was just where my dad worked. They were always very clear about costs, and they were willing to help and willing to work with families. So, I mean, I'm not trying to make a plug for Robert's Blue, but that's where my dad works. And
that's how I found that. And I don't, you know, hope my family spends $1,000 on a casket or whatever. I don't need a $10,000 casket. Got more hands up. We have Casey. We have Brianna. Brianna, you want to?
One thing that when we started having kids, we deal with the financial institution Thrivent, which is Christian-based, and they recommended that we buy life insurance policies for all of our children, and then that's a policy that they can have the rest of their life, no matter their health or diagnosis or anything. And it's not much, but it's enough to cover funeral costs. Mm-hmm. And so that could be something you could gift your kids that they could have, and then their families would have, that at least if something would happen, that you would have the amount to do a proper funeral burial.
That's a great point, and that's something that we did that as well, and our children got to an age like this is yours now. So take it, and it's I can't remember what the amount was for sure, but it's a good point. Casey.
Well, there's so financial weighs in on it, geographical with China, they're running out of room. And then also the society you grew up in, because fishing communities, they returned you to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So you were eaten by fish. Vikings put you on a raft and lit it on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So society, I mean, it's what, it weighs in on it, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So.
I had wondered about the biblical dominion of the earth and the stewardship of the earth aspect also. When you mentioned Japan is very, like, there's only a finite amount of space. So you could almost understand the, we're going to cremate the person because we do not have the space, and it would be a hazard to everybody else who lives here if we tried to fill the space with preserved bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to sway one way or another on it. In Kansas and in the United States, we have a lot of space, but there are also a lot of places that do not have a lot of space. So I wonder about the dominion aspect of it a little bit.
Could be, with Japan, just a non-Christian,
right,
culture,
yes,
for sure,
absolutely.
Forever.
Absolutely.
Not forever, but for a long period of time. Joe, we're not going to get to our lesson, are we?
I've had some conversations about this years ago, and it really made me think about it, but you can go on Amazon right now and buy a cardboard coffin for really inexpensive, and I know it is cardboard, but they're just putting you in the ground. I mean, I'm...
My grandma actually wanted that, and
yeah.
they would not allow it. She had
really?
To be inside of something which
yeah.
she did not want. She actually just wanted to be dropped in the ground.
Yeah, there's just state regulations.
There
are regulations.
You have to be in a vault.
Because
you have
there
to be
are
in a,
some,
in a
there's
sealed.
A hazard part of it. There's like a biohazard issue.
Yeah.
We
I did not anticipate that this would go so I should have.
We do know someone, if there is a designated area, I assume that's why that happened. It was actually in Lawrence, Kansas. And yeah, I mean, it's all the ones in that area are just like put in a black bag, down in the hole, and covered.
Huh. Can you just go on
the
farm?
We witnessed it. It was right there.
Can
so.
You just get buried on your farm? Mm-hmm. Wait, so
and you
we
don't have to have the whole, you know, the second
do you? Is the
thing they put you in.
The vault?
Yeah, the vault.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't.
I mean,
what's the rule for the vault? Because there's...
Some
cemeteries
don't.
Right. You have to be sealed. It has to be sealed inside of the vault.
Well, yeah, Louisiana had floating coffins during the Katrina.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're actually on top of the ground. Most of them, or a lot of them, from what I remember. You know, I mean, it's a big cement thing on top of the ground because you dig very deep.
I guess it shouldn't be surprising we're talking about the body that we end up talking about these kinds of things. Maria, were you? Okay.
I just didn't understand why they make you do a bowl because it was for health issues.
Yeah,
or I didn't write on all
It depends on the state.
I have a question. So I think Carol was asking it, but I don't know if I answered. Like, can you be buried in Kansas on your own property? The distance dug properly and you were in a contained thing. Like in California, this, I think he was like a DA, some weird story at the news where he like buried his wife by her favorite tree, didn't tell anybody, and then it was like enough time passed that it was discovered and it ended up in the news.
In Kansas you can, but you have to re-deed your land with the burials.
You have to get a permit or
yeah, I just
re-deed?
Checked again because we
okay.
checked that when we lived in Madison. We were like, well, let's get buried out here.
Just plant me in the ground.
So there's a guy west of Madison, an old cowboy, who got buried under his favorite tree with his horse.
Aww.
So, you know.
That sounds so special. I said, don't you, like, are that trunks
for it?
The spring tom.
You just have to show on your property where it is. You can't desecrate. So they have to know where it's at.
And right east of Madison, between Lamont and Madison, there is a little, I don't know if you guys ever saw that or not, but there's a little family plot, probably 6 or 8
mm-hmm.
tombs, just a little dinky, mm-hmm. dinky plot, so. Mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson, you guys have been to Monticello, has a family plot there. There's a lot of that.
Some cemetery, my grandma passed away like 4 years ago. Some cemetery can, like what somebody says that, what if they put a box? So my grandma was buried in a box, so on the ground. So.
And I know somewhere on our property that we still have now on our farm, there's a couple of premature births, babies that died that our grandparents buried somewhere on the property, I don't know where. So,
yeah,
used to happen a lot.
That raises another good question: what to do with the stillborns or babies that you miscarry?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in Wichita at Wesley, there was a nurse who got a plot designated at one of the nearby cemeteries to that hospital just for that reason, because otherwise they are incinerated.
Incinerated,
yeah. So, you know. That's another thought. Like, what do you do in that case?
Yeah. So, if anything, this discussion is helping us elevate the dignity and value of the human body and respect for it and care for it, even when it's done on this earth, anyway.